This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 16th of March 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Band. This is your daily checklist of the things to see, watch and listen to around the world this week. Today I'm in the studio with Fitton Gunnar, visual arts editor at the Arts Desk, who's here to discuss Art Basel Hong Kong, the Richard Diebenkorn Show here at the RA in London, and Savage Beauty, a retrospective of the late Alexander McQueen's wonderful designs at the Victoria and Albert Museum. Plus we'll hear from artist Alex Prager at her debut show in Asia. That's all here to come on the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. Stay tuned. Fitton, welcome to the show. It's your first time on the Monocle Arts Review, or at least with me.
It's my first time with you, yes.
Hooray.
Very exciting.
So I wonder where to sail to on our first maiden voyage. I think we're going to sail to Alexander McQueen's show at the Victoria and Albert Museum.
Okay, yeah, it's been causing a lot of excitement.
So much blog action. Every single website, every single newspaper has a point of view on it. Most people have been very positive about it, but you're narrowing your eyes at me. What do you think?
It was a beautifully designed exhibition. Alexander McQueen was an incredibly theatrical, very dramatic designer, very influenced by the Gothic, so he had a very Gothic sensibility. Mm. And all that comes across quite well. However, it's a bit too tame. I mean, fashionistas will probably love this. And if you're interested in design, I urge you to go. But I thought it was just slightly tame. If anyone remembers the David Bowie exhibition that the V&A had about 18 months ago,
nodding along to that, I'm sure.
That was fantastic. It was a completely immersive experience. And by the end of it, if you weren't a Bowie fan to begin with, you probably would have been by the time you came out. It was a completely immersive experience. Now, they haven't really done this. They haven't really been as adventurous, should I say, with this exhibition. You've got roomfuls of mannequins after mannequins with his beautifully cut, very dramatic designs. But I would have liked to have seen more immersive video footage of his catwalk shows, because his catwalk shows were phenomenal. They were really beautifully conceived stage shows. And he created a drama. I mean, he was, in his early life, McQueen did work on shows such as Les Miserables and other stage shows. You know, he worked on dress designs for the theatre. Uh-huh. And that really, his theatrical sensibility isn't fully exploited, in my opinion, in this show. So it kind of feels a bit too tame for me. I certainly think it's worth going.
It's one of those funny things, isn't it? We always come a cropper when we do, and the V&A is one of the few places in London that does fashion.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously a museum of decorative arts as much as it is. It's not all about, you know, very little of it, in fact, is obviously about painting and objects in that sort of artistic sense. So it's always the problem of how you animate something. You know, we're always told that dresses don't come to life until they're on a woman or a person, let alone a model. So it's kind of tough when these things are staying still. Is that the problem, that you're confronted with mannequin upon mannequin and it's all a bit static?
It's incredibly static. I mean, the rooms themselves are very dramatically designed, but they're still mannequins in rows. And unless you're a real fashionista who's obsessed with the cut of clothes, and there are plenty of those, and, you know, as you said, the V&A is one of the best museums in the world for fashion, and that's where fashion students go.
Yeah.
And it's one of McQueen's favourite places to get ideas. But for the general visitor, I just think a more immersive experience, you know, to really bring McQueen's very animated visual imagination to life would have really helped this exhibition.
All right, well, we're going to head on now in quick succession. We're going to talk about Richard Diebenkorn at the Royal Academy. Fitton, we're in a whole different ballgame here, presumably. This is a man that did landscapes, became an abstract expressionist, went all over the place, and a man little shown in the UK, am I right?
Oh, what a shame. Anyone who loves painting, in fact, anyone who loves art, I urge them to go and see what I imagine will be for me at least, one of the exhibitions of the year already. Richard Diebenkorn, as you say, was an abstract artist, and then he went into became a figurative artist, and then he went back into abstraction again. His Californian artist, who was a generation younger than the abstract expressionist, and probably one of the most, or the most, along with Philip Guston, another American artist, who went from abstract to figurative, actually quite interestingly. So along with Guston, he is probably the most significant post-war American artist after the abstract expressionists. Really well known in America, hugely collected in America, but actually strangely and weirdly neglected in this country. And I can't quite work out why, because it's a phenomenal exhibition at the Royal Academy. It's the first survey since 91. So we have had a survey of his work.
And where was that? Was that also done at the Royal Academy? Was that some other place?
It's a Whitechapel gallery. It was a small exhibition at the Whitechapel, not seen by that many people. And I hope Diebenkorn will now be a name familiar to most gallery goers in the UK after this show. He was a phenomenal painter, incredible facility with paint, and he's best known for his Ocean Park paintings. He did this series.
These big blue canvases, angular things.
They're kind of geometric, huge paintings of... they're kind of inspired by his view from his window. In he lived in an area, a suburb just outside Los Angeles called Ocean Park, and they're kind of inspired, they're kind of in between complete abstraction and kind of landscape painting, although they are abstract paintings, and they're huge, and the colours, he had such a wonderful sense of colour. Like Matisse, he was very influenced by European painting, particularly Matisse. And throughout his long career, the artist died in 93, you can see all these strong influences, but they're still very American paintings. And I urge anyone to go and see. I think they'll be bowled over, as I was.
It's one of those things that we probably need to understand. Maybe we need to understand him, just finally, on Richard Diebenkorn at the RA here in London, in terms of his influence on other artists. That's often the case. Maybe that's the job of the Royal Academy to say, well, you might not have heard of him, but he's actually very important, and this is why, and this is who came after him. Can we answer that question?
Well, the thing is, he's an anomaly, really, Richard Diebenkorn. If you're asking about his influences, he's a painter. He's foremost a painter. He made a few sculptures early in his career, but he stood outside kind of art history, in a sense, because at the time he was painting his abstract works, you know, in the early 50s, and then figurative paintings in the 60s, you know, America became obsessed with pop art and installation, and then video art. And he was resolutely a painter. So when you talk about who he influenced, well, he kind of stood outside all that, because he never left painting to go into a sort of fashionable video art or installation art. So perhaps that's why he's a little less known over here, because he does kind of stand apart. But as a painter, he stands absolutely beside, you know, artists like Rothko, artists like Pollock, in terms of his facility with paint. But if we talk about who he influenced in turn, it's difficult to say, because he very much stands kind of as a lone figure as a painter.
Poor old Richard Diebenkorn, all on his own at the Royal
Academy. He's very venerated in America. Absolutely. And hopefully with this show, which surveys his career, it spans his whole career, but it's not a comprehensive survey. It's quite a small, tightly edited survey, but for all that, beautifully chosen works.
I'm looking forward to going and seeing that one. I can't wait. That is Richard Diebenkorn. He's at the Royal Academy of Arts on Piccadilly. Lastly, we're going to Hong Kong, Fisun. Well, we're going to talk about Art Basel Hong Kong, which is sort of closing up, actually, as we speak. And we're going to end the programme with an interview between our Hong Kong editor, Aisha Spears, and Alex Prager, the LA-based artist. But first, Fisun, how do we judge the health of Art Basel Hong Kong this year?
Well, I think it's just getting bigger and bigger. I mean, it was taken over by Art Basel, the original Swiss fair organisers. And every year it ran in March. This year it's moved to May to attract more important sort of heavyweight collectors and curators, because in the summer, Anyone who follows the art calendar will know that we have so many international art fairs and art biennales, and they all happen a lot. Well, a lot of them happen in the summer. So we've got Frieze New York, we've got the Venice Biennale coming up shortly, we've got the original Art Basel in Switzerland coming up in June. So it kind of overshadowed Art Basel Hong Kong because it was sort of clashing. So they've moved it to March, hoping to attract the really big players in the art world. And I think they'll do that. It's really coming into its own this year. And, you know, it gives the Western collector an opportunity to encounter a lot of contemporary Asian art, which, you know, by emerging artists that they may not have heard of, or even established artists, you know, East Asian artists that they haven't heard of. So they're really, you know, going big guns on it this year.
There's a difference between these art fairs. Art Basel Hong Kong might have in its first year been accused of simply bringing some of our Warhols out of Gagosian's cupboard and selling them to the Chinese. This is traffic heading in the opposite direction.
Well, perhaps. As it has been in previous years, it's a 50-50 split between, you know, big guns like Gagosian and Hauser and Wirth showing Western artists. So all the artists that we've probably heard of, the big players there. And it's showing 50% Asian artists and Asian galleries. So it's a genuine half-half split. So I think this Chinese art, for instance, has been, you know, over the last decade, because there are lots of Chinese very rich collectors now. So it's a very attractive market. The Chinese art market is a very attractive market. And this expands over the whole sort of East Asia region. And so it's really timely that there should be a major art fair devoted to not just Chinese artists, but, you know, the whole East Pacific, Asian Pacific region.
And also, I guess, especially in that neck of the woods as well, the auction houses are super strong and really tailor their sales to Hong Kong tastes, Chinese tastes, all the people that congregate on that small island. The auctions are strong there. So it'll be interesting to see what the galleries brought as opposed to what is making the headlines for big sales that go under the hammer at Christie's and Sotheby's,
yes,
presumably as well, isn't it?
Well, I should imagine that video art will be quite a heavy component,
yeah,
actually, because there are lots of well-known and not so well-known artists venturing into animation, video, and artists like Cao Fei, who's becoming more and more of a well-known artist in the West. You know, she's very ambitious in her multimedia works. So I think the art that's going to make a splash, sort of multimedia work and installation work, I find that interesting because Western galleries nowadays are showing much more sort of traditional based work, painting and sculpture. And so it'll be interesting to see how the types of works differ from the sort of Western galleries.
We're going back to the future.
Yeah.
We were talking there about Art Basel Hong Kong, which I think if you're in the area, you can still nip across to the convention centre and buy something. Before we go, let's hear from one artist who's showing her work at Art Basel this week. Alex Prager is known for her filmmaking and her cinematic images at Lehman Morpin Gallery. She's presenting 5 new large-scale photographs, as well as some of her past films that continue her exploration of the psychological experiences of crowds and the individuals within them. This is the LA-based artist's debut show in Asia, and Monocle's Aisha Spears caught up with Prager at the gallery.
This body of work is really kind of where I'm at. It feels very like a distorted sort of transitional sort of a stillness to these crowds. So I'm not capturing specific moments from individuals as much as I was in Face in the Crowd, which was all about kind of showing the two sides, the sea of anonymous faces that a crowd can become and how that can become overwhelming and bring up all these different emotions of loneliness and fear and all these other things. But this one is more focused on the moments of stillness that happen that are less specific. Very much the in-between moments of life where nothing is really happening.
For something like this, which is, I think, has a lot less figures or faces at least in each image than perhaps we've seen in other work that you've done.
Mm-hmm.
Does it take less time? Is it less difficult to make? I mean, in terms of the actual process, how does it compare from the last series?
It definitely took less time because there's less people. So you just have less to organize and figure out. But also there wasn't a film. So the film is always the thing that takes most of my time and energy. And I didn't do a film with this.
So the film that we can sort of hear a little bit of in the background of this interview that's playing in the other room of the gallery here in Hong Kong, what is that film and how did that come about?
The film is Face in the Crowd. It's from the last series I did. It's meant to be a three-screen installation so that you're supposed to feel, when you walk into the film room, you're supposed to feel completely immersed in the crowd, as though one would feel when they're trapped in a crowd, I could say. And I think it's great that we're showing the film alongside the newer crowd pictures because it really does show kind of the progression of different ways to look at these crowds.
So you have another piece in the fair. What are your thoughts on, I guess, showing at a fair like Hong Kong? Have you got any thoughts? Do you have collectors here that you know will be visiting? Is it an important market for you? Or is this much more a case of kind of you're a debutante into Asia and into the market here?
I think it's more a case of the latter. I feel very new to this scene. I haven't shown at Art Basel very much. I think it was last year. I showed in Unlimited. So it's all very exciting to me. I really want to just walk around and look at the architecture and feel the vibe because the energy is definitely very different from anywhere I've ever been before.
That was Alex Prager speaking to Monocle's Aisha Spears in Hong Kong. Her show is on at Lehman Morpin until May 16th. And that brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you to Fisin Guner, visual arts editor at the Arts Desk, for talking us through this week's art picks. You have been tuned in to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. The show is produced by Holly Fisher and researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Tomorrow, the brains behind the South Bank Centre's Meltdown Festival, Glenn Max, will be in to talk all things music. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bound. Thanks for tuning in.